Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. At least it's tonight here. I know people listen to the show at all hours of the day and night all over the world, and that's really exciting. It's so much fun. I actually spoke to a guy in Australia who is going to be my client. I'm going to do some clearing work for him, and he found us online through the radio show. That's so cool. So thanks for being with us, and we're going to have some fun tonight with my guest, Steve Curtin, who, like me, is really fascinated with the place where science touches metaphysics, touches spirituality. And we'll have some fun kicking that around after tonight's metaphysical musing. And, oh, there's all kinds of stuff to talk about tonight. You know that I'm fascinated with the things in the physical world that affect the way we feel and the way everything functions. And we've got a special event coming this Friday. Tomorrow is the full moon, but it's a super moon, which means that the technical term is lunar perigee. It means it's the closest that the moon is to the Earth in its annual cycle. So if you're out somewhere where you can actually see the moon, and I suggest you get to some place where you can, it looks much bigger and much brighter than it normally does, and it's much closer. Now, anytime there's a full moon, people are affected by it. All you have to do is talk to anybody who's done any kind of emergency work or worked in an emergency room or a psych hospital or any of those places. The full moon is different. People do have a response to it. The super moon should be interesting. Be interesting to see if those of us that are sensitive feel something different when the moon is that close. But there was a whole other thing that I read online today, which I've heard about before, but it gave more scientific detail. And that is, our planet has a magnetic field around it that's created by the big piece of iron and molten iron in the center of the Earth. And that's a good thing, because that electromagnetic field, besides making compasses point north and that kind of real basic stuff, is what protects us from a lot of the dangerous radiation and particles that come from the sun. So when there are solar flares or cosmic winds or all this other stuff, which I've mentioned, which Claudia McNeely, who's on the show, periodically talks about, and all of those cosmic events which affect the way we feel and how our bodies feel are mitigated normally by this electromagnetic field. It's like our super shield around the Earth. And there are special satellites that were put up not long ago that are tracking what the shape and the strength of the electromagnetic field are. And they're finding that it's doing strange stuff. It's weaker in some places and stronger in other places, basically misshapen from what it normally is. And over North America, it's fairly weak at the moment. And in the ocean south of India, it's very strong at the moment. And that has an effect on how much protection it provides from all that stuff from the sun. So if you're sensitive to solar flares and other things from realizing that your symptoms correlate with that stuff because you're reading Ask Claudia, AskClaudia.com or on Facebook, it'll be interesting to see how everything changes now. But the other thing that's going on, and part of the reason that it's misshapen, is that the North Pole is rather rapidly moving towards Siberia. And I'd heard about that for a while, because the indigenous tribes in the polar region can't use a compass because the compass always everywhere is north because they're so close to the North Pole. So they do everything by the position of the sun, and the position of the sun has been changing because the Earth is tilting slightly differently. I started noticing probably 3 years ago, since I've been living in the same place in the same building for 10 years, I started noticing that at different times of year, the sun was rising and setting in different places than it normally did, because it would show up between two buildings where it had never been before. And that's the same kinds of things that the elders of the tribes in the Arctic are talking about, except not quite as sophisticated as they would do. So there are all these changes, which I'm going to guess most people listening to the show, well, there are some people listening to the show that are paying attention, but most people are not paying attention. So things are changing around us, and they're affecting the electromagnetic field that we live within. They're affecting the way the solar flares and everything else affect us. And basically, unless you happen to read that article or know me or Claudia, you wouldn't have any idea why, for example, your body hurts or you feel tired or any number of other things at particular days. So once again, it's a confirmation from the scientific side that something is changing, which correlates to the stuff that we've been talking about for a long time. Always interesting to see where the two come together. So that's our musing for tonight, and something to pay attention, and I'll get to talk to Claudia about it later in the week. That's tonight's metaphysical musing, and now let's have some fun with Steve Curtin. You with us, Steve? Thanks so much for being on the show.
Hello, David. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, Steve is somebody that whose materials I've read on Facebook, and I always read them and said, cool, I never thought of it that way, or I thought of it that way, but I like that twist, or any number of other things, and started reading some of his other stuff online because you're a blogger. And I'm always fascinated with people like you and people like me that see that place where the metaphysical, spiritual, mystical, whatever you want to name it, touches the scientific, or really where the scientific touches that reality. So welcome to the show. And the way we always start is we ask people for your story. How did you wind up in the place that you are, thinking about things the way you think about them?
Well, I've always had an interest in science since I was young. It kind of waxed and waned as I grew older. But believe it or not, I probably wouldn't have a hard time believing this, but it started off with a psychedelic experience. The first time I tried psilocybin mushrooms, I didn't realize it at the time. It was totally, you know, subconscious, but that experience kind of planted a seed in my mind about how different, you know, reality might be from the way that our senses perceive it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just started growing in me, in just like a personal journey. Like, I just started becoming more interested in the nature of reality, the science behind it. I started getting pushed towards physics and quantum mechanics. The first book I read on the subject was The Universe in a Nutshell by Stephen Hawking, and I was pretty hooked after that. And mm-hmm. And I didn't understand a thing of it when I read it the first time, but there was just something about it that, you know, that drew me to it, and I just kept at the reading that book, reading new books over and over again, and sooner or later the concepts started kind of sinking in because they're so bizarre, they're so counterintuitive to the way we experience reality. So it doesn't make any sense to the scientists themselves, who they'll readily admit if you the quantum mechanics just blows their mind. I mean, it's crazy. It's, Fred Allen Wolf says, you know, it's mad scientists. I mean, it's insane. Just started off learning about physics, and then there was just little you know breadcrumbs thrown here or there that started pointing to the correlations between what we're quote unquote discovering in the laboratory in our particle accelerators and in our space telescopes and whatnot, and what the ancient peoples of the world, you know, the Lao Tzus and Buddhas and the ancient Egyptians, the Mayans, were, you know, their creation myths and their astrology. It was basically if you know how to kind of you know, creatively interpret what they were saying, they're saying the exact same thing. You know, it's about the illusory nature of reality, the illusion of time, the illusion of the solidity of matter, all these mind-blowing concepts that, you know, it just doesn't make any sense when you think about it. But, I mean, so, and I'm just the kind of person that, you know, I'm on this personal journey. I'm not a scientist. I'm not accredited. I have one semester of college under my belt. I do enjoy writing. But like, you know, some people stand around the water cooler and talk about American Idol or the Kardashians or even politics and whatnot. But what really gets me going is, you know, like just my relationship with reality and the amazing implications of, you know, this experience that we're having. And I feel like when I learn something new, I have to shout it out to the world, and there's no better way to do that than through, you know, a web blog, you know?
Right. So, right. Well, you know, you can consider this the water cooler.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I'm a guy like you, except that in addition to a fascination with physics, I do shamanic work, and a lot of the people that are on the show and a lot of the people that I know do metaphysical and shamanic kinds of things. And that's the flip side of it, where you're having the experience of the stuff that shows up in quantum weirdness.
Absolutely.
Except you're seeing the practical side of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
quantum physics and molecular biology as well, too.
Right.
You know, like those. It's so connected. It's unbelievable.
Right.
You know, shamanic societies know things that we're only discovering since we've created the electron microscope, but they knew it.
Right.
They've known it for thousands of years.
And, you know, there are some really basic ideas that it's terrifying to me that people can graduate high school and never have heard of it. Mm-hmm. So Einstein, almost 100 years ago now, discovered that initially light was what he was looking at is both wavelengths, which was the understanding of light, and a stream of particles. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that everything is both a wavelength and a stream of particles, but that's where he started his investigation and his understanding. And that changes absolutely everything in the way you look at the world. And most people, because physics is as it's taught is based on math and not on concepts, people don't get that really basic thing. You know, Einstein said reality is an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. Mm-hmm. You know, before quantum mechanics, which he had a really hard time with initially, I don't think he ever really liked
Stuff. He went to his grave. He just had, there was something very uncomfortable with him about it.
Right, right.
For good reason.
But also, his initial understanding of light came from basically a shamanic journey. He called it a thought experiment. Mm-hmm. He asked the question, if I was sitting on a beam of light, what would I see? If I was sitting on a beam of light traveling at the speed of light, what would that experience be? And he intuitively came to an understanding of the relationship between light and the speed of light and matter. And then he came back and did the math and fussed with it. But, you know, most of our society, people have no idea that that's what Einstein's work was about, or that everything is both energy and matter, which, you know, you were talking about the particle accelerators, the Higgs boson stuff is in many ways very funny.
And it's funny, the physicists, when you listen to the way they talk, it seems like they almost blame reality for it. Like they say that the universe should not exist, you know, that it shouldn't be here, but it is. So what, you know,
and that's interesting.
I'm not sure if they say that tongue in cheek or if they're just, you know, that, I don't know, I say arrogant, but they seem to think that, you know, they're so close to figuring it all out. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, you're talking about a universe that is infinite. So you're never going to find a theory of everything because it's just, there's no end to it. There's no way to clamp it down. I said
the issue is that they don't have a way to measure the stuff that isn't physical.
Right.
So three.
That's where a lot of the ancient cultures, like especially like Buddhism and Taoism, comes in and tells you that your mind main concepts cannot you know clamp down reality. There's no way to experience the truth. You can't know the truth. You just become the truth, and that you do that by just by silent contemplation. You can't let your mind run amok thinking about things and labeling things and expect to understand the nature of things. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's because that uses the human mind and the ability of the human mind to have expanded awareness as the experimental equipment.
Right.
So when I talk to physicists, I say, look, I am not only the observer, I'm also the experiment, and I'm also the lab equipment.
Yes.
And you really hate that, except that if you really are truthful with what your situation is, it's true also, which, you know, quantum physics shows that every observation changes the experiment. So and your intention and your thoughts are changing the experiment, which makes it really hard to put quotation marks around hard science anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, the Higgs boson, I just giggle over the Higgs boson, not that anybody really understands it, but what they're saying is they think they found a subatomic particle that is what mitigates or creates or how whatever word they use, mass.
Yes.
Except that it's not really the particle, it's the energy field around the particle that's doing it.
Yes. If you saw The Fabric of the Cosmos with Brian Greene, he describes it as a superstar, a cultural superstar in a crowd of people. And the more famous the person is, the more difficult a time he's going to have getting through that crowd because everybody wants to be around him. So, you know, the more famous the person is in terms of being a particle, the more mass it will have. Something to that effect, I'm paraphrasing, but
you know. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah,
well, you know, the problem.
To conceive it.
Yeah, the problem, at least my flippant take on the problem, is that if you don't know what creates mass, that's where you get into the universe not existing.
Right.
Mass is required for space, time, and gravity. They're all functions of mass.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have space unless you have objects that you can measure and that move around within the space. Time is basically measuring the movement of objects.
Yes.
And gravity is a function of mass. You know, the more massive the object is, the more gravity it has. But we don't have any way of explaining why mass exists. And since everything, as you drill deeper and deeper, look at smaller and smaller aspects of material reality, all you find is energy and relationships between the energies. You get into this whole thing of what we're experiencing being some kind of illusion that matter doesn't exist. And that's pretty far out there, but also sounds like all the mystics I've ever read and I've ever met.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't know. I mean, I'm sure your listeners do, but the atom is entirely empty space. It's almost completely insubstantial.
Right.
It's only 0.00001% substantial, and even that small percentage might not even be, it might just be energy. It's just a vibration.
Right.
You know, I think it was it Niels Bohr who said that everything that we consider to be real is made of things that are not real.
Exactly.
And that was surprising. Yeah, it's no surprise.
That was a long time ago. He was a contemporary of Einstein.
Right, and it's not surprising to me that, you know, all the Max Planck is big on this. Einstein had the same kind of experience. These physicists had their worldview, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, you know, greatly affected by their findings in the lab and their theories. I mean, it's, you know, and they mentioned it. They drew correlations between the ancient, you know, the Eastern philosophies.
Right.
It's fascinating
stuff. Well, you know, part of my experience, one of my teachers was trained in the Philippines by psychic surgeons. And psychic surgeons can put their hand through physical matter. They can reach into the body without an incision and take stuff out. They can put their hand through a wall or a table. Demonstrating pretty dramatically that solid doesn't mean solid.
No. Nope. It could very well be there just because you expect it to be there.
Well,
if you've read David Wilcox, The Source Field Investigations, he mentioned mm-hmm. a case where a woman was put under hypnosis and said that when she came out of it, she would not be able to see, or he or she wouldn't be able to see his or her sister standing in the room there.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought the person out of hypnosis, and he couldn't see his sister. And he held a watch up against the back of his sister and asked him to read the inscription on the watch, and he was able to read the inscription on the watch.
Wow.
So it's you know, the person's consciousness was altered so that he didn't expect to see something that was there. And considering the fact that, you know, his sister is 99.99999% empty space. It's not even, she's
exactly.
not even there to begin with. And that kind of, you know, suggests that our consciousness and our subconscious especially, you know, creates reality because it's what we expect. We get out of bed and don't fall off a cliff because we expect the floor to be there. We don't realize it. We don't think about it. It's just instinct.
I have a wonderful story that speaks to that, and it's got to do with ghosts, but we will start there after our short break. I want to make sure people know where to find you online. You want to give folks the website and your Facebook information?
Sure. It's consciousresonance.net, and the Facebook page is Conscious Resonance.
And if they want to friend you, the spelling of your last name is C-U-R-T-I-N.
Yes, sir.
Steve Curtin, so that they can find you. You know, I just so people will have an idea, I've enjoyed the stuff that you post and everything that I've read for a long time now. And just, you have a fascinating take on things. So I encourage people to go to your site. Check out what you're talking about and what you're kicking around. And in so many ways, you're in what's called an autodidact. You're a self-taught man. And that was my dad. My dad was very well read, but didn't go to school very much. And he knew more than most of the people that had lots of degrees.
And he probably had a lot more money.
No, that wasn't.
Well, you know, not being in debt, I mean, up to years.
Yeah, well, there's that too. We're going to take a break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller, which could happen.
That could happen.
So don't go nowhere. We will be back with my guest, Steve Curtin, here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. On Empower Radio.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
Well, that's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win.
Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What did he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Steve Curtin, who is a blogger and prolific on Facebook and has some fascinating things to say. So thanks again so much for being on the show with us.
Thanks, Dave.
As I alluded to before the break, there's a very one of the things I talk about a lot is ghosts, and because of my work and dealing with them, and I know there are people that don't believe in that stuff, but for those of us that deal with it all the time, it's very real. And I do a talk about ghosts, which is called Everything You Know About Ghosts is Dead Wrong, for my own amusement. And one of the things that people frequently report is being awakened at night from a dead sleep by a ghost looking at them. And my follow-up question, and I'll have the people in the room, you know, raise their hands if they've had the experience, and it's extremely common. And my follow-up question is, was it the presence of the ghost that woke you, or did the ghost sit on your bed and the mattress moved and the movement of your bed woke you? And more than half the people will say that it was the movement of the bed. Mm. So this is not psychokinesis, you know, somebody using their mind to intentionally move the bed, because I've heard of that also, that, you know, a ghost will shake the bed without touching it. Creepy for people that have never heard of this stuff, but, you know, I've heard that widely reported. the thing about a ghost sitting on a bed and having it move as if they were alive is that it's an expectation. They don't know they're dead. They don't know that they don't have mass. And physical reality, which has mass, responds to their expectation as if they still had mass. And, you know, it's just, I've heard this from people so often, and the more that I fuss with it and try and figure out what it's saying is exactly what you were coming up with, which is physical reality and the way it works is a set of expectations or agreements, however you want to express it, that's incredibly ancient and probably carried by some mechanism like DNA or something else, so that the understanding comes with us when we become physical. But
yes,
somehow the same thing that they're trying to figure out about physicality with the Higgs boson and all the other stuff that physicists are struggling with is that same issue of what is it that makes stuff behave the way it behaves if there's so little physical material there. And, you know, part of it is Newtonian physics has been well accepted and works really well within the realm of size that it works for.
Right.
And so everybody knows that the world works that way. And you can predict how it works. The quote unquote laws of physics are very accurate in the physical world at the gross level. Except for the stuff that doesn't.
Yeah.
Which is all the mystical stuff and all the shamanic stuff and quantum physics, which is saying at the deepest levels of matter, it's behaving the way shamans and mystics have been talking about it from the very beginning.
Yeah, there's got to be something intuitive about the way that they experience reality that allows them to see the things that we need today, these modern, you know, very expensive, powerful tools to experience. I mean, they didn't have telescopes, they didn't have microscopes or particle accelerators, and yet they were able to describe reality the same way that the quantum physics are. So, you know, where did that come from? Where did they gain these insights? And, you know, a lot of them might say that it was psychedelic experiences like ayahuasca or, you know, those kind of things. But a lot of them didn't necessarily have those, you know. So
right.
What right. was, where the, did it come the, from? How were they able to access that information?
Right. And the similarity between the descriptions all over the world in every indigenous culture.
Absolutely.
And we don't realize how sophisticated some of those cultures were. There was a very sophisticated culture in Africa, which we don't know much about because it didn't come through to this age. Similarly with the South American cultures, we know some of it, but don't really have a sense of how big, how powerful, you know, their influence, the area that they controlled and the kinds of things that they could do for all of those old cultures was something that we can't really grasp at the moment. The thing that I'm always frustrated with, and I have had a couple of opportunities to talk to physicists about it, is here are all these questions that the physicists have that they don't have a good experimental approach for because they don't have a starting point, or they don't have a measuring tool, probably because they don't understand the nature of what they're measuring at this point. It's either a frequency that is out of the range of everything that they use, or it's a vibration that's coded differently than electromagnetic vibration, so that using the standard stuff that has always worked is not working, whatever.
Yes. Kind of like them trying to observe the soul leaving the body at death. They're expecting an electromagnetic event, and that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. So
right, because they don't necessarily know what to look for, therefore they can't come up with the measurement tool to look for it.
Right.
But there are people all over the world that have consistently reported certain kinds of things. So, for example, one of the gifts that I got in doing my work, because I clear buildings, is one day I suddenly could see an energy matrix of the building made in, you know, I see it as light, kind of like graph paper made out of light, and I can see damage to it. You know, there's all kinds of information I can get that way. In the Hindu scriptures and some of the oldest writings that we have to go back to, the description of the nature of reality is that it is a net of jewels.
Yes.
That's what I see. So I'm having a confirming experience of something that was written down thousands of years ago. And I know lots of other people that have some variation of seeing a grid of light. So we've got, you know, all experimentation comes from anecdotal evidence and consistent results in anecdotal circumstances. And then you can formulate an experiment where you can take a measurement. But they don't go to the anecdotal data that's available in all the mystic traditions. And
they don't like the implications of it. You know, they want everything. They have a very set definition of what is rational. Mm-hmm. And they don't go above that bar, you know, ever, you know. So that's why you have a lot of people that don't like, for instance, the Copenhagen interpretation of the double slit experiment, whereas, right, you know, the act of observation altered, you know, the wave particle you know, event.
Well, let's do a, you know, couple of seconds of explaining the Copenhagen
Sure.
You know, which, as I understand it, well, first of all, the double slit experiment is a very, very tiny device that has two slits in it that are big enough just for one photon or one electron to go through the slit. So it's really, really tiny. And you would expect that if they were randomly going through the two slits on the screen behind it, you would get two lines of marks where those particles hit the screen.
Yes.
And that is true until you put a measuring device on one of the two slits to try and tell which slit each particle is going through. And at that point, they start acting like waves. There's an interference pattern, and it's not two lines anymore. It's multiple lines across the screen as if it was water interference patterns in a lake, where you drop two stones. That really messes with their heads.
Yeah, they don't like it. It's an implication that just, you know, are you kidding me? Our consciousness helps mold reality? Like, that's insane to them. And it is insane. It's totally counterintuitive to the way, you know, again, we experience reality. It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
observation, it's been duplicated multiple times. I mean, it behaves differently when you're observing it than when it's not, when you're not observing it. So,
and that,
you know,
that is an exact explanation in physical form in scientific confirmation of what all healers experience. You know, they make an observation, you know, especially if you're doing remote healing, which is what I do. You look at something remotely and you intend that it change in a particular way, whatever your method is, and stuff changes because you inserted yourself into the process and intended for it to change.
Right.
It's basically like the double slit experiment on a macro level.
And that also kind of speaks to another quantum weirdness experiment, which would be entanglement, where, you know, you have this non-local behavior of, you know, of reality where, you know, you're able to, where two particles or two substances are able to communicate with each other regardless of space and time instantaneously.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? So, you know, there is a non-local, almost like a level or dimension of reality where, you know,
yep.
the laws of, where the strict laws of Einsteinian physics don't apply. And he hated that too. That's one of the things that was basically the one thing that he says, all right, quantum physics has to be wrong because of entanglement.
Right. Spooky action at a distance.
Yes. And yeah, and later on, it was before they ever observed entanglement in the 80s, they actually figured out that if entanglement wasn't a property of quantum mechanics, then the entire theory had to be thrown out. I mean, it is the bedrock foundational concept of quantum mechanics. So, you know,
I would say to anybody who has known when something was going on with their kid or their spouse or twin sister or whoever it was, and called up and said, what's going on? What's wrong? And was absolutely on the money.
Right.
That's physical world manifestation of entanglement.
Or all those times you picked up the phone to call somebody and they were already on the other line. You know, synchronicities, people would call them coincidences.
The strangest one in my world is that I do this remote healing work, and I don't think of myself as being in the place. I don't project myself into someone's house, but I've had two clients say that they turned around and saw me in the building. I'm like, okay, that's within the realm of quantum entanglement and stuff that my teachers have told me about.
Superposition, right. Quantum, they've actually photographed particles in two separate places at the same time.
Right.
One object in two different places at the same time. And people, you know, people don't understand how lunatic that is, but I mean, it's so incomprehensible that people probably wouldn't even be amazed to learn that, you know, we photographed one particle in two separate places at the same time. You know, so it's
right, and that's
that bananas. You know, it's just like whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's the real reason that they don't teach the basics of physics without the math, because you don't need the math to explain the concepts.
You need the
math to be able to do experiments. But the concepts are just concepts. It's like saying you can't teach physics in French because you don't know the language that it's written in. You know,
right,
math is language. But how would the world be different if everybody in high school was put in the situation of grappling with these kinds of concepts and thinking about the world differently?
And that's exactly why they don't do it. They don't want people thinking about real world things.
Right. The other thing that happens is you suddenly realize that everything is connected and that you do have influence over everything around you. And you can't be separate from the person next to you that you really, really, really want to be separate and bad and wrong because they're different. They're not.
They're the same thing.
You know, and that's the concept of oneness that's in all the major religions.
Absolutely.
Certainly in the Christian tradition, the basic concept is oneness. Here, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one.
Right.
Of course, that kind of gets lost somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to my to what I was mentioning earlier, like my experience the seed was planted by a psychedelic experience.
Yep.
And you might have heard of a comedian named Bill Hicks.
Yes.
And he said that he was glad, you know, he was joking, of course, but he was glad that mushrooms were illegal because he took them. And what happened was he laid in a green field for 4 hours going, my God, I love everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, if that's not a threat to this country, you know, we got to keep building nuclear weapons. You know, how are we going to keep building all these arms and killing each other once we realize we're all one?
Right.
You know, it's going to mess the whole economy up.
which is true. War is about profits. It's not about politics. And
it's not, you know,
it's a different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. but that's basically the gist of why, you know, not only why those kinds of experiences are illegal, even though, you know, mainstream science, I just saw a Live Science article explaining how mushrooms, quote unquote, open your mind. And here's a mainstream science article saying mushrooms open your mind. Mushrooms expand your consciousness. And yet they're illegal. And it's the same reason why they don't teach those kinds of concepts, those kinds of know, just knowing yourself concepts of physics in school. They don't want you to understand yourself and your relationship with the
I think it's as much that there isn't a conversation within science and education that brings it to a simple level so that people who are not science oriented can grapple with the concepts. They just don't have a sense that there's a way to have a simple conversation about it and say, hey, look, we've confirmed all of this stuff and this is how it works. Things are not the way they seem. This is a really much more interesting place than what you can see.
Another problem might be that because of physicists' definition of rational, they might not want that kind of thing taught because they just don't like the implications, and they have almost like a cognitive dissonance with it. Well, they don't want, you know.
There's an underlying. Go ahead.
They want everything to be as it seems. Everything is as it seems. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for a way to say, all right, this is the way reality is. This is it. This is it right here. You know, concrete, tangible. And we know it all. We know everything.
Well, there's an underlying political, historic reality as well that has kind of been lost in the mist of time, which is the earliest scientists were considered heretics and were attacked by the church. And they eventually came to an agreement that said, you can have the physical world and do all your stuff and we won't arrest you and kill you. But anything that smacks of metaphysics, philosophy, spirituality, any of the realms of religion, you have to stay away from.
Correct.
And I think that there is a very deep fear-based memory of, we can't cross that line. This is not our realm. We will be in real trouble if we cross the line. And I don't think most people associated back to the struggle early on in science, when they were moving from alchemy to science and moving from astrology to astronomy. But I think it's a deep and profound fear.
Yeah. And yet, so, you know, if you read what, you know, a lot of these physicists said, and, you know, and a lot of these were very early physicists, you know, back in the early 20th century, they've kind of got their acts together since then. But, you know, I mean, Max Planck said that mind is the matrix of all matter. And behind this mind, behind matter, there has to be an intelligent mind. I mean, there's something, you know, intelligent about the universe that's, you know,
And now the struggle is looking for consciousness within the brain, which is exactly the opposite. You know, if you look for consciousness, as somebody put it, looking for consciousness in the brain is like looking for the announcer inside a radio.
Nassim Harriman.
Yep. And I think it's very much to the point. Consciousness is everything. And we are a part of that consciousness and interact with it. And the brain is some kind of electronic device that allows us to do that in the physical body, but it's not the source of the consciousness. It's just a
switching
station.
Where it comes from. There's nobody home. They look for the observer and there's nobody home.
Right.
And then there's all kinds of weird anomalies, like people they get like this thing called water on the brain, where their entire brain disintegrates and fills with spinal fluid. And yet, so there's only a thin membrane holding the whole thing together. And yet they're as conscious and lucid and intelligent as anyone else.
And there is at least one man who had hydrocephaly and almost no brain matter. For. Yeah. And he became a high level physicist.
Right.
With no brain to speak of.
So. There's the case of epileptics, where they figured if they removed part of the brain that was causing their seizures, it would aid their suffering. But they expected a drop in intelligence and cognitive ability, and they saw none. The seizures went away, but they were actually able to think and interact with people just the same as you know, you would expect them with a normal brain. It's absolutely incredible.
Right. And in spite of the level of sophistication that we've reached with understanding the brain and the electronics of the brain and all the rest of it and what functions are in what places, it's still pretty primitive. It's better than it was 100 years ago, but we still don't know a lot. Which is just to say there's a lot more that we'll find out. But
yeah, well, a big problem with that is they're actually still trying to find out how it originates in the brain and not how it plays through the brain.
Right. Right. And that's the problem of materialism, the problem of starting with physical matter. Absolutely. Even though only 3.3% of the universe is has mass.
Right.
So,
did you hear about the there was a new discovery recently? There's more light. There's either more light in the universe. I sent this in my email. I haven't read it yet, but it just came out today or yesterday. There's more light or not enough light in the universe that there should be. But not only is there not enough mass in the universe as there should be,
right?
But they have a problem with the amount of light that's there as well. There's more or less than there should be. I'm gonna have to get back on that one, but. Yeah. Really incredible.
Yeah, send me a link for that because that sounds fascinating. And they always,
I'll be happy to.
Always give me the giggles. So, Steve, as often happens with my fascinating guests, we're running out of time.
I see that.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Please give everybody your web information again so they can find you.
Really, it was great talking to you. My website is consciousresonance.net. I post about usually around 3 times a day. And then I have my original articles available and an ebook also. And then my Facebook is Conscious Resonance. Visit my page, click like, visit the main page, subscribe to my updates. Like I said, I won't flood your inbox. I just post a few times a day.
And I'm always fascinated with the quirky ways that you look at all this stuff, besides the fact that you're looking around for articles and finding stuff that I wouldn't have noticed otherwise, and it gives me stuff to think about. So really appreciate what you do.
Well, I'm glad I had an influence on you, and it's what I do it for. I try to just nudge people and say, you know, turn off the TV maybe and get out there and experience
experience and think. You know, one of the things is you're thinking about stuff, and most people are thinking about nothing, is too bad.
I hate to go on another tangent. One more thing. They recently did a study where they actually discovered that most people would rather subject themselves to electrocution than actually just sit alone with their own thoughts.
Yeah, I saw that article.
Amazing.
Yeah, they would rather have shocks than sit and think.
Amazing.
Steve, please stay on the line when we're done so we can chat a little bit when the show's over.
Very good.
My guest has been Steve Curtin, who thinks about all kinds of stuff that most people don't and has a wonderful way of expressing it. So thank you so much for being on the show, Steve.
Thanks for having me, David. I appreciate it.
And my pleasure. And if you're curious at all about what David does, since I do strange stuff sometimes, you can go to househealing.com. And on the contact page, I have cleverly hidden in plain sight every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever happens to be going on for you with a person, a place, a situation, and we can assess whether my work will be helpful to you. So please take advantage of that. If you're looking for more about the show, we're hiding that in plain view at thefarkasfiles.com. Isn't that catchy? The archive is there. Information about the show is there. And you can also find us on iTunes podcasts, on iHeartRadio, and on Stitcher. So there are lots of different ways, if you're out and about, to listen to the show. Search for Empower Radio, and then search within that for the Farkas Files, and you will be able to find us. So thank you again so much for listening, wherever you are, whenever you are. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.